Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. This is a live talk show, a live program here on AFR. I'm Tim with Walker Wildman. Good morning. Start over, Tim. Okay. Walker Wildman. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. You've said my name thousands of times since I'm your son, so I don't know what changed about today.
And I've called you your brother and your sister many times when I've been frustrated with you before I got around to your name.
Yeah.
As parents with multiple children are apt to do.
Oh, yeah.
Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Yeah, my parents would say, hey, you.
Hey, whatever your name is, you're in trouble. Nah. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have one sister.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She still live in Nova Scotia?
Still live in Nova Scotia, and she's going through the winter weather there.
Okay. Hey, let's welcome in Dr. Ray Pritchard. Ray's on the mend there still. Ray, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
Doing well. You stand a little peppier.
Well, I am.
Okay.
I've got the surgeries all behind me,
okay,
so far as we know, and definitely it's slow, but definitely on the upside. Now it's just recovery, getting better, and get back out on my bike. Maybe in April, we'll see.
Okay.
I cannot believe he's talking about getting back on the bike.
Got to overcome that
first
bike ride after the wreck. You got to overcome that I don't know if that's a fear or not, but that anxiety.
There's a little bit of uncertainty, right?
Just a
little bit.
But surely,
bike phobia.
Well, in April, it should be okay there in Kansas City. I think the Royals will be playing about that time.
How cold is it in Kansas City? It means we've been talking about your neck of the woods and the weather.
We have been below zero for the last couple of days, but it has zoomed all the way up to 11 degrees this morning. A balmy 11, heading towards 33.
Now, you're talking about straight up, right?
Straight up. None of this wind chill nonsense.
Right.
Just straight up 11 degrees this morning, but
good,
it's going to hit 33, they say.
Wow. Oh, wow. 33, wow. Yeah, we're going to get 63 here in Tupelo on Saturday.
Whiplash.
Oh, that's nice.
Temperature whiplash.
Yeah.
Is what we're experiencing.
That's right. Golfing weather, Tim.
You're right. I already called my uncle. We got a tea time. We're ready to go.
There you go.
If it rains, I don't know. I'll develop a very bad attitude. but I may just play in the rain if it's 63.
Huh? That's right. Celebrate.
All right. A lot of things going on in this world of ours. We're going to be discussing Jan Markell and Alex McFarland will be with us this hour, so you want to make sure you stay tuned. If you don't like what we say, maybe you'll like what they say. So stay tuned. Stay tuned for that. Okay, Fred, get us started here.
Well, this is a story we talked about yesterday. What's going on in Virginia? First, you had the New York law now about abortion up to and including right to the end of the 9 months of pregnancy. Story we talked about yesterday was a Virginia delegate, Kathy Tran, where she introduced a bill there in Virginia. Now, just the political makeup in Virginia is this. You have a Democrat governor, but you have a legislature that's controlled by Republicans. So, Kathy Tran is a Democrat. She goes before this Republican hearing yesterday because of a bill that she's introduced. I think she calls it the Repeal Act. The repeal part of this is that basically removes any restrictions to abortions whatsoever. But what got her in trouble, somebody caught her back and forth with a Republican congressman, that Gilbert.
That would have been This is a public hearing.
A public hearing.
Yeah. Right.
But a video of him asking her, wait a minute, are we talking now legalizing abortion, your bill, legalizing abortion up to and including the moment that a fully formed baby is about to be born. She hesitates and says yes. So just to remind, if you weren't listening yesterday, I want to replay this moment before this.
This is in the Virginia State Legislature.
That is correct. Go ahead. Cut number one.
Delegate Tran.
Yes, sir.
How late in a pregnancy would your bill apply if a physician would simply willing to certify that the continuation of the pregnancy would impair the mental health of the woman? How late are we talking about?
Through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester?
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would make.
I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Why does she hesitate?
She hesitated and she winced.
Because she knew the answer.
How can I couch this?
How can I couch
this?
She winced because she knew exactly what he was asking.
Yes.
Are you now telling me that a baby that has been allowed to form in the womb up to and include full 40 weeks,
yes,
9 months, are you now telling me that your bill would allow that baby to be killed at the moment that that baby is about to be birthed?
By the way, let's keep in mind here, because they often cite health of the mother, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Zero.
What they've done in this case is even beyond that. They want to allow for what amounts to infanticide for not only the, quote, health of the mother, but the mental health of the mother, so that a woman could say, you know, I think this is going to put too much stress on my checking account, so I want to... Now, I don't know who would do that, but that's just, I mean, that's could happen. And I'm just saying, Ray, it's a very, very minuscule reason for, not that there is a good reason, but they usually give it more serious thought than this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very callous reason for an abortion. And did you agree with Fred, the reason, and Walker, the reason she hesitated? Is because she didn't want to admit it like that?
That's exactly right. She didn't want the truth to come out.
Right.
Because really, Tim, is exactly what you said. Once you throw that mental health in there,
that's
at
anything.
Any moment, she can just say, I don't want this baby. Even if the baby is in the process of being born,
right,
and they will abort it right out of the birth canal.
Right.
That it's hard to... And she didn't, the representative did not want that barbarity on the record, but.
Even though it's her bill.
Even though it's her bill, she didn't want the real truth to come out. Wow.
There's been a firestorm in the wake of this. And so yesterday, the Virginia governor, who's a Democrat, Ralph Northam, who, by the way, is also a pediatric neurologist, he went on WTOP, which is a Virginia area radio station. You're not going to believe this, folks, but he took it even a step further. All right, he's trying to quell the storm over this.
By the way, this bill was tabled.
It was tabled.
The good news for people listening around the country and
yes,
in Virginia,
mm-hmm,
it was not passed.
That's correct.
In the legislature.
Only because of Republicans.
Yes.
If Democrats had run the legislature, it could
they would have
passed
it. Yep. But the Democrat governor, mm-hmm, his name is Northam.
Ralph Northam.
He was on this radio station you're talking about, and he was asked to comment on it?
Yes.
Is that what
you're going to hear. Cut number three.
When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother.
I can't believe I'm hearing that.
So he went another step.
Yeah.
The baby's now out of the womb. It's alive. So we're going to have a discussion with the mother.
Here's a myth. The myth that, and this is not coming from me, this is coming from various OBGYNs and doctors who deliver babies. This is a tweet from Omar Hamada. He lives in Tennessee. He's an OBGYN. He's a doctor. He's delivered 2,500 babies. Here's what he said. He said, there's not a single fetal or maternal condition that requires third trimester abortions, not one. He said an early delivery, yes, but abortion, no. And so the whole idea that there's all the time there's this life-threatening scenario where we have to kill the baby to save the mother in the third trimester.
That doesn't exist?
That virtually never exists. Yes. There is not one case where we have to kill the baby to save the mother in the third trimester.
So this was a gentleman who is an OBGYN.
Yes.
He's on the record. His name is out there.
Yes.
And he says he's delivered 2,500 babies.
Yeah, 2,500.
And he's the one who said what you just said.
Exactly. Yeah. So this whole idea that we got to have abortion to save mothers' lives in the third trimester is never used. They're only going to use it.
But let me ask you this, Ray, what is the deal with the Democratic Party being so pro-abortion?
They have become out and out now the party of death. They used to say, remember when the Clintons played that game, safe, legal, and rare?
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's gone. What's happened now is the cover's been ripped off the Democrat Party, and let's just say it, they're the pro-death party. They are in favor, and look at what happened when the bill was passed up in New York. Not just the bill itself, but the cheering that took place for that evil monstrosity. I think what happened in Virginia just dovetails with what happened up there in New York. And by the way, guys, did you notice what the governor said? Because he's a doctor. He knows the truth. What did he call it? He called that the baby. He called it an infant. He didn't say fetus.
Right.
He didn't say a little bit of protoplasm, this little part of the woman's body. He didn't.
Right.
He called it what it was, an infant. And he basically was in favor of, he even said, make it comfortable.
Yeah.
Make the baby comfortable until the family decides whether we should keep it or kill it.
Well, let me just thank the legislator, the delegate who asked the question of this, of his fellow legislator. Who
Kathy
Tran. Do you have the names there?
Kathy Tran is the Democrat.
Kathy Tran, she's the one that's promoting this. She was the woman you were hearing talk there.
Yes.
The delegate. And do you have the gentleman's name who was asking her the question?
Not right. Okay. I think it's Gilbert. Gilbert, okay. I may need to be corrected.
By the way, we have a Facebook and YouTube page. And maybe I know there's somebody who's listening to us in Virginia who knows the gentleman's name who read.
Mm.
Do you know it, Walker?
No. But I was going to say one thing. Was this shared on Facebook, what you just sent me? You found that? Okay. This is something Brent just found, speaking of doctors and surgeons who know about this. This is a quote from C. Everett Koop,
I remember him.
Yes.
U.S. Surgeon General.
Yes.
Under Reagan.
Under the Reagan administration. Here's what he said. In my 36 years of pediatric surgery, which is surgery on children and infants, I've never known of one instance where the child had to be aborted to save the mother's life.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole idea
is a myth. You call it a myth.
It's a myth. And so because you can now, oftentimes the doctors say we need to go ahead and have an emergency C-section.
Yes.
We need to deliver this child even if it's at 20 weeks, 23 weeks, because there's something going on that's not healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole idea that we have to kill the baby to save the mother is a myth.
They dupe the public in that way. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. By the way, we are on Facebook and YouTube. You can type in Today's Issues on Facebook or YouTube. If somebody can get us the name of the
lawmaker
in Virginia who asked the question of
Kathy Tran.
Yeah, I would like to give him credit because what a great series of questions he asked her, and that helped frame the issue.
Absolutely.
And hopefully it's been tabled, and hopefully it'll be never come up and be voted on.
He was interviewed by this gentleman, by the way, on Fox and Friends this morning, but he put out a warning. Yes, it's been tabled, but there is a state election in Virginia this year.
Mm-hmm.
This can be brought back up.
Yeah.
So the folks in Virginia need to be aware of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story, Fred.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think we're.
I got a selfie with her.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. I'm serious. When I went to the White House last August, did I tell you about that?
No.
I didn't tell you I was invited to the White House.
Yes, about that,
dinner.
But you didn't tell me about the selfie.
I'm a pretty important person, Fred. You not know this? I was invited to the White House, and I said yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to pray about it.
No.
Went to a dinner at the White House with a lot of other Christian leaders and hosted by the President, First Lady. vice president, and the you call Ms. Pence a second lady?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, anyway. So at my table, table number 7, was none other than Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And so I went over to her and introduced myself because I know her daddy, Mike Huckabee, been a friend of our family for years, back before he was governor of Arkansas. So I went and talked to her and said, I know your dad is a friend.
Yep.
And I said, can I get a selfie with you? You're famous.
Yeah.
She said, sure. And some reason I couldn't reach around to get it or couldn't get it. And she said, here, give it to me. So she took my phone and she took the selfie of it. So yeah. Technically.
Wow. Your friends.
I don't have a selfie. It wasn't a selfie. It was a picture taken by Sarah.
Okay.
Anyway, very nice lady, and serves the president well. But she's in the news for what reason, Fred?
Well, she's a Christian. Like you say, her daddy's a Baptist minister, Mike Huckabee.
Right.
She went on the Christian Broadcasting Network in the last few days. And here's what she said that has the left going absolutely ballistic. So I want you to listen yourself. So she's on with this Pat Robertson's network, Christian Broadcasting Network. It's a Christian network.
Right.
So she's asked about her testimony.
And she's a Christian.
And she's a Christian. But they're shocked at what Sarah had to say during the interview. Cut number 4.
I think God calls all of us to fill different roles at different times. And I think that he wanted Donald Trump to become president, and that's why he's there. And I think he has done a tremendous job in supporting a lot of the things that people of faith really care about.
Wow. She got in big trouble over that.
By who?
Well, I've been reading some of the comments, and we couldn't repeat them on the air.
Right.
How dare you say that, that God wanted Donald Trump to be president of the United States. And for the most part, they list his failings through life. But, you know, the problem is that these people are criticizing. They don't understand that we're all sinners. Sarah Huckabee wasn't saying that Donald Trump hasn't sinned in his life.
Right.
But God in his sovereignty chooses people to be leaders.
Right.
That's biblical.
Ray, you would know the most about this as with being a Bible teacher most of your adult life.
You're going to ask him a trap question?
Oh, no. No, this isn't a trick question. This should be a softball.
Okay.
Ray, right. but throughout Scripture, isn't it true that God often uses broken people, hence King David?
I wouldn't say often. He always uses broken people.
There you go.
That's all he's got to work with.
Mm-hmm.
All the perfect people are in heaven, right? Mm-hmm. So we're all broken to one degree or another. And the Bible says, and Fred, you said it so well, this is not a statement about God's political preference. This is a statement about the sovereignty of God, that he raises up one and he pulls down another. He takes a man out of obscurity, and he ends up on the throne. And I think what Huckabee Sanders was saying is nothing more than we believe that behind the ballot box stands the hand of Almighty God.
Amen.
God raised up at one point Ronald Reagan. He raised up a Bill Clinton for reasons we don't fully understand, but we affirm the sovereignty of God. The same with Barack Obama and the same with Donald Trump, that it was God in his mercy and in his grace. Yes, the Lord knows all about Mr. Trump's failings, but that's true of all of us. We've never had anybody in the White House that was perfect or even close to moral perfection. But God raised up this man for such a time as this. I think that's all she's saying,
yeah.
And I think that's what Christians have always believed.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, the left is going ballistic over this. Amongst them, CNN anchor Aaron Burnett mocking Sarah Sanders on the program, and then invited Democrat strategist Maria Cardona to jump in. Cut number 5.
It was God. God wanted Donald Trump to be president. This is according to the White House press secretary, Sarah Sanders, who says this in a new interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network. Maria, do you think she's right? God, this is what God wanted?
Well, if he did, it's because he wanted to punish us for taking our democracy for granted and for not ensuring that every person went out there to vote. And this is what we got. There was so much hypocrisy in what Sarah Sanders talked about. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is that I can't imagine that God would put or would want somebody to be the commander in chief, the leader of the free world, somebody who doesn't understand the word truth, the word honesty, the word humility, the word integrity, the word honor, the word forgiveness. I mean, I could go on and on about how this president is actually the antithesis of Jesus Christ's teachings and anything that real Christians would put on the table as something and someone that they would believe in.
Ray.
All she's saying is she doesn't understand anything about God or anything about the Bible or anything about the ways of the Lord. Hmm. You had, you know, in the Old Testament, Cyrus, my servant. He was a pagan leader of the Medo-Persian Empire, but he's the one who gave the okay for the Jews to return from Babylon. There's no hint that he was ever a true believer, but God called him my servant. Donald Trump is God's man for America at this moment, raised up by him. And I've already said that there are, you look back at the men who served as president, you have all kinds of people all across the spectrum, and yet behind it all stands the hand of Almighty God. We who believe in the sovereignty of God. So in that sense, everything Sarah Huckabee Sanders said is true, and what those women were saying in response is just nonsense.
And could it be that God allowed Donald Trump to become president because of the stand that Donald Trump took during the election campaign for the unborn? Mm-hmm. I will never forget that debate with Hillary Clinton, where unapologetically he said he was going to do everything he could to protect the unborn. And mm-hmm. also I believe that his statements about Israel and his defense of Israel also. Could it be that God allowed Donald Trump to win that election? Those are two good reasons, I believe, mm-hmm. because I believe that Donald Trump was being obedient to God in those cases. We're not excusing anything that Trump may have done in the past, but as you pointed out, Ray, God in his sovereignty allowed Donald Trump. He allowed Barack Obama to become president, for reasons that we may never understand, but that's not for us. But us, we have to believe that God chooses leaders, national leaders, and raises them up for his purposes.
Yeah, to what you mentioned, Fred, about the 2016 election and the differences there on policy and life, you know, that last debate was between candidate Trump and candidate Clinton was a very eye-opening debate. Mm-hmm. Even I think that pulled over people who were not in favor of Donald Trump, who were stuck in the middle not knowing what to do. That pulled them over, who had pro-life sympathies, that pulled them over to vote for Donald Trump because Donald Trump said during that debate, Hillary Clinton is in favor of abortion up to the last minute before birth, and she did not deny that.
Yeah.
She didn't deny it. She didn't dispute it.
I know we got to go to break right here. You know what? I think it's unfair for people to we Christians, especially evangelical Christians who tend to vote Republican overwhelmingly, and I know a lot of mainline folks do too, mainline Christian denominations, conservative Catholics. They vote on the issues like pro-life and so forth, and judges and everything like that. But they all, these people who want to say, because we do that, therefore you embrace everything President Trump, for example, this time it's President Trump, has ever said in his life, or everything he's ever done, or what he might tweet today, that we're responsible for that.
Right.
That's not fair, no more fair than it is to blame everything somebody else, like President Obama does, to say every Democrat out there across the country is responsible for everything he's ever done or said,
right,
or believed. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
King of the Wild Frontier.
The music's free. I know we call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
Ding, ding.
Yes.
Oh, really?
That's correct. Giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you want a cheeseburger without cheese.
Hold this.
called the
G. I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You can't squeeze more into 3 days than we will in Washington, D.C. on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and in September. We're going to the Capitol, Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, that's outside, Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and we're going to Mount Vernon on that Saturday of our tour. So much to see, so much to do, and it includes lectures and talks from Stephen McDowell, who will be our historian along the way. For more information on these June or September Spiritual Heritage Tours and the separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, for all the information on this, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu.
The Supreme Court dealt a devastating blow to religious liberty, announcing they will not hear the case of Coach Joe Kennedy. Coach Kennedy, a Marine veteran and a former football coach at the high school in Bremerton, Washington, was fired in 2015. He refused to stop praying on the 50-yard line after football games. The Supreme Court said they needed more information to resolve Coach Kennedy's case, meaning it goes back to a lower court. Justice Sam Alito wrote in a dissent that the lower court's understanding of the free speech rights of public school teachers is troubling. First Liberty says they plan on keeping up the fight, and they need to for the sake of the Constitution. They represent Coach Joe. It's a sad day for religious liberty, folks. In America, it's okay for a football player to take a knee to protest the national anthem, but it's illegal for a football coach to take a knee to pray to God. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you want to watch the show or comment on something we're talking about or access the stories that we're talking about, we're posting the stories that we're talking about. Go to our Facebook page, Today's Issues, or our YouTube channel. You can watch there as well. I'm Tim with Walker and Fred and Ray. And even if we just all just got a quarter of a brain, that's a whole brain right here, people. Right, Fred? Fred's not even paying attention to what I'm saying.
One whole brain among
yeah.
us.
Okay.
Well, Rush Limbaugh says one half his brain tied behind his back. He says he does his show. All right. Let me just add to what we were talking about before the break. We're going off, and we'll do this real quickly. I know we got Jan standing by, but Sarah Huckabee Sanders mm-hmm. said in her interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network that she believes God wanted Donald Trump to be president, and therefore he is. And that's the view of many, many Christians, a high percentage of Christians, I think. In our world today, and this is very frustrating, and sometimes I'm probably guilty of this as well, and we all are. We make broad, sweeping generalizations, and we don't allow for any nuance. We don't allow for any caveats. We don't allow for any explanations or try to understand people. So what the left does here with Sarah, of course, they have disdain for Christians anyway, okay? What that lady said, the commentator there who was criticizing Sarah, what she says is there's some truth to that. President Trump doesn't always represent the fruits of the Spirit. That is a true statement, but neither do I.
That's
okay.
Right.
But I'm just saying his President Trump's career, his life, is based on a very flamboyant, brash, pompous persona. Am I right? That's how he got famous. Mm-hmm. All right. So that is a true statement. But see, that doesn't allow for, well, has his life changed in the last 5 or 10 years? In the last 10, okay. Mm-hmm. How so? What has he said? If you were being attacked every day, all day, from all sides, guess what? You might get up a little agitated in the morning, too. You see what I'm saying? This whole thing about racism, I know I'm getting on a rant here, but let me just finish this. This whole thing about President Trump and racism, that narrative, mm-hmm. because that's all the political left now says, they say it 24/7. You turn on CNN right now. I don't know who they got on. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do it, Brent. Who they got on. But I guarantee you, it won't take them somewhere in the next hour. They're going to get back to Trump and racism. Mm. Okay? Because that's the narrative they keep pushing. Before President Trump became president, there was nothing in his career that suggests that he was a racist. Nobody ever charged him with that. He had a very high-profile entertainment life. He hired African Americans in his business. He did a show with all these celebrities. Nobody ever came out and said Donald Trump's a racist. It's only when he became president that they throw this at him. And of course, he says some things that need explanation. If you listen, there was an explanation. He went after the NFL players, right?
That's correct.
The NFL players for not standing for the national anthem. Here, I'm just going to give you one example of how this works. Okay, more than half of America agreed that the NFL players were wrong to disrespect the national anthem and the flag. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not a crazy, right-wing nut job attitude. Mm-hmm. Just respect the flag. You can have your political differences, but stand during the national anthem. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, because President Trump said, if I were the owner of a team, I would make the SO... That's what that's how Trump talks. Yeah, you know? That's what I mean. He's not he's very virtuous with his language. I would make him stand. Well, okay. Well, that's what Jerry Jones did, and other owners too. I imagine behind the scenes, they said, "Listen, you work for me. I pay you millions of dollars. I don't ask a lot. You pay, give 100%, and you stand for the national anthem. Because if you don't stand for the national anthem, you tick off our customers." Right. Our customers don't show up at the games and don't watch on TV. Guess what? I can't pay you millions of dollars. Do you understand how this works? Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, because Trump said I would make them stand and most of them are black, mm-hmm. therefore he's a racist. You correct. See how this works?
All right.
It's unfair, mm-hmm. and the left runs with that. Oh, he's a racist. Because why? Because he said they ought to stand for the national anthem. Okay. Well,
How is that racist?
How is that racist? Right. Because 80-90% of the players are black. Well, how do you make that deduction that that's racist?
Right.
Because he has a policy view that's very patriotic. So I get tired of that, and it's day after 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 day. If President Trump is a true racist, then as one of the African American commentators said on Fox News the other day, he's the best. He's hit it so well for all these years.
Right.
All right. There you go. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Jan Markell joins us most Tuesdays, and she is from Olive Tree Ministries. She's the president and founder of Olive Tree Ministries. And Jan has a radio show called Understanding of the Times, a very popular show here on AFR on the weekends. And Jan, good morning to you. You're joining us from Minneapolis.
Well,
go ahead.
It's 20 below here, and that's balmy. That's actually a heat wave right now.
20 below, that's insane. And Ray's with us, by the way.
Yeah.
Ray's in Kansas City. He's warmed up to 11 below, I think.
Yeah. I want to ask Jan.
Yeah.
Jan, has your furnace gone off in the last 3 days? I mean, does it just run constantly?
Yeah, it runs constantly. But you know, the serious side to that is a lot of people have lost power here because of the cold, so I don't know what they're doing. Probably moving into a hotel, not sure. But It's really serious. I mean, and to the north of us, even far worse, you know, up in Duluth, moving up further north, it's just, it's really, it's like the moon or Siberia, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, we joke a lot and have fun with Jan about the Minnesota weather throughout the year, but this is not funny. This is a very extremely serious situation for the people in the part of the country being affected by this Arctic blast.
Yeah,
but, so very serious.
Yeah, I
situation.
Think this is the worst since the 1970s. I do recall back in the late 70s there was some wind chills at minus 75 here, right in my area, Twin Cities type area. And in the last few days, the wind chills have been minus 60. But it's been a long time since people have suffered like this.
What do they do? What do they do for the homeless people?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. And there are honestly some homeless who don't care. They want to stay in their tents. Now, I do know that our primary homeless area, right before the probably sometime even in December, I think they rounded them all up and tried to get them to some place of safety. Because, you know, December, January, February here, it's really rough. But there are some homeless who don't care. They want to stay in their tent. They want to be left alone. They want to use their little grill. And they're just quite happy. So hard to understand.
Yeah.
Jen, one more thing. And I know this isn't what you came to talk about. That's the weather.
Yeah.
But so for in your case, do you leave the house much? I mean, what's it like to leave? Because I imagine you can get frostbitten within a matter of minutes.
Yes, literally in a matter of minutes. You do have to bundle up. I mean, I personally stay pretty close to home. And certainly elderly folks can't go anywhere. If you've got any health issues, you can't go anywhere. But, you know, my understanding is, you know, way down south, that's all reversed in the summer. So it's our fallen planet, and it's just kind of what we have to endure in one location or the other.
Yeah. Fred, what's the question you have for Jan today?
Well, Jan, as you're well aware, your state has a brand new member of Congress.
Right.
Ilhan Omar, am I pronouncing her name correctly?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah, she is a Muslim lady, and she's made no secret of her disdain for the nation of Israel. And that certainly came out recently. She did an interview with Yahoo News. The host there was Zainab Salbi, I believe her name is. Anyway, she was asked, obviously, about her plans. The congresswoman was asked about her plans for Middle East peace. So here's a segment of that interview, and then we want to get your comment, Jan.
Sure.
Cut number two.
By having an equal approach to dealing with both. Most of the things that have always been aggravating to me is that we have had a policy that makes one superior to the other. And we mask it with a conversation that's about justice and a two-state solution when you have policies that clearly prioritize one over the other.
Such as?
When I see Israel institute law that recognizes it as a Jewish state and does not recognize the other religions that are living in it, and we still uphold it as a democracy in the Middle East, I almost chuckle because I know that if, you know, we see that in any other society, we would criticize it, we would call it out. We do that to Iran, we do that to any other place that sort of upholds its religion. And I see that now happening with Saudi Arabia. And so I am aggravated, truly, in those contradictions.
So she's comparing now Israel with Iran, a terrorist-sponsoring state. And then she goes even further, as if she's saying Muslims, of which there are a million Israeli citizens who are Muslims,
right,
somehow they are suffering in Israel. Jan.
Well, any suffering that they're doing in Israel, and of course, I mean, Israel is not a perfect society, but if they are suffering, I maintain, and I've been there seven times, I maintain that the suffering is coming from Palestinian Authority and Hamas leadership, because those leaders are corrupt to the core and evil to the core, and they don't care about their people, the Arab population living within Israel. And I've seen it with my own eyes. They simply do not care about them. But Israel, my goodness, you gentlemen have been there, and you know that that the freedom given to the Arab population of Israel is astounding. They don't have to serve in the military. I mean, they can serve in the parliament, which is called their Knesset. So they are represented in the government there. And I just have never, ever seen personally any kind of suffering. But I just want to say one more thing about Ilhan Omar, and she represents our third district here in Minnesota, which is heavily Twin Cities and which is heavily Islamic. And I'm very, and also Representative Tlaib from the Michigan area, I'm not sure which district, she calls herself a Palestinian. But both of them, they go on to say they want a one-state solution. And a one-state solution, quite frankly, is Hitler's final solution. So I think we have, with Islam having moved into the Congress, I think we have some real deep concerns. At least the pro-Israel community has some deep concerns about what's moved into Congress, because they're open. They're not trying to hide their anti-Semitism. There, I said it. They're not trying to hide it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, the situation, as you say, Jan, and I've traveled in Israel many times, and the situation, I remember seeing a survey, and I can't cite it exactly, don't have it here in my hands, but that survey was of Israeli Arabs / Muslims. Not all Arabs are Muslims, but the majority of them are. Would you rather live in Israel or another or a Muslim country? And they said they'd rather live in Israel. That was the majority of them. So they understand the freedoms that they have. Granted, there is a rift between Palestinians and Jews in Israel. And it's over land and past grievances and so forth. And I've heard both sides. It's one of those things where you hear a side and you go, you're right. And then you hear the other side and you go, you're right. And then so there's some of that involved. But the people in Israel, the Jews in Israel, they would love to live in peace with the Palestinians, and they try as best they can. But when you have these suicide bombers disrupting life and creating terrorism, it does draw a suspicious eye to all of them, in a way, to all the Muslims over there. So that's just a fact of life. Now, that's calmed down because they built that wall.
Right.
Jan?
Walls actually work.
Yeah, they built that wall, and it stopped the suicide bombers.
I think they cut it by 99%. The mayhem and the slashing of Israelis' throats and all was cut by 99% with that wall, which, of course, is criticized even by American Christianity. Many of our churches and denominations will criticize that wall. Yeah. But it's saving lives, so and I don't understand why they have to bash the wall, but they do.
All right. Well, and let me just say, there are a lot of Arabs in Israel who get along fine with Jews. That's
absolutely
a lot of them, because I know when I travel over there a lot, I've used Arab bus drivers, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So there's and people work in restaurants and hotels that you visit, some Jews, some Arabs. So.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Ms. Omar will be stirring things up, I promise you, as will the representative from Michigan. They will be stirring things up, I'm very concerned, and I think the pro-Israel community needs to keep their ears open to what they're going to hear and then react, and react in defense of Israel.
Oh, Jan, what's your show going to be on this weekend?
Well, we're going to talk about the perils of the paranormal. We get everything from Netflix on down that promoting the occult, celebrating the occult, and Christians need to fight back. So we'll talk about it. It's Saturday, 1 p.m. Central, Sunday, noon Central time.
Now, you're going to let Bigfoot remain a mystery, aren't you?
We will, I promise.
Okay, because, that's don't debunk Bigfoot completely.
Let's have a little fun with it.
It's not a biblical question.
Well, Bigfoot should come up here. He'll freeze to death in 10 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Jan.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. That's Jan Markell. What a closing line there. Ray, you still there?
I'm still here. If Bigfoot is up in Minnesota, I hope he's staying warm.
Bigfoot. Bigfoot's probably going, what?
What did I do?
Why don't I do like the birds? Why don't I go south in the winter?
Yeah.
Anyway.
We could talk about the Bigfoot mystery for an hour.
I just, Are you listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network? If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at comments@afr.net, comments@afr.net. And we have a we podcast this show, do we, Walker?
We do. We podcast it at our website, afr.net, and also, we podcast post the podcast on Apple devices and Android devices. So just go to your podcast store, type in Today's Issues, and you can catch the latest show.
Okay. Joining us now is Dr. Alex McFarland, who's the host of, co-host, I should say, of Exploring the Word each afternoon from 3 to 4 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio. Alex, good morning to you.
Good morning, everybody.
Where are you today, sir?
Well, I'm in North Carolina, literally just walked out of a public high school, spoke twice in Eastern Randolph High School in Central North Carolina this morning.
Oh, what'd you tell them?
Well, I was talking about morality and the U.S. Constitution, and it was my privilege to be in front of two different groups of high school seniors, and we were talking about morality. And, you know, by the way, if you talk about the Constitution and the Founding Fathers, I mean, you can get a fair amount of Bible and gospel in there merely by quoting the Founding Fathers. But it was interesting. We were talking about morality, objective moral truth. And guess what? These public high schoolers, you know, it was divided, I'm going to say, 60-40. 60 being what I would probably call traditional values, but nearly half the groups, guess what their highest moral virtue was?
I don't know what.
Equality.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I asked, you know, are all things equal? And the discussion gravitated towards transgenderism. And I asked the group, and in each group, there were several that, you know, became a little vocal. And I said, you know, really can... Are men and women equal in every respect? I know we have equal worth and value and personhood and equal protection before the law, but I mean, even biologically, physiologically, equal, yes. And transgenderism came up, and I said, really, do you really believe gender is fluid? I mean, can you change your gender? And of course, they did believe that you could.
You mean half of them did. Is this a public school or a Christian school?
No, this was a public school, okay. A public high school.
Okay.
But it was interesting how I would say overwhelmingly the two core values that seemed to shine through in, you know, about a little less than half the group, equality, unbounded, absolute, pervasive equality, and relativism, that morally, physically, in all things, we create our own truth. And so it's been an interesting morning sharing truth and little bit of gospel in a public school.
Okay, equality, that is a big word being used in our country today. Fred's got a question for you regarding something your fellow North Carolinian, J.D. Greer, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention. What pastor does he, I mean, what church does he serve?
Summit down in Durham. Which is a multi-campus church, the Summit, sometimes it's called. Which, by the way, as far as I know, they have led a lot of people to Christ.
Yeah.
They
oh,
do
no.
a lot of
we're
mission
not,
work.
We're not here to bash J.D. Greer, and as far as I know, you know, the vast majority of the things that he says and does are gospel. I mean, there's no question about that. But he is seemingly in that Russell Moore camp, Russell Moore, the ethics... what do you call it?
Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission,
ERLC.
Yeah, which is the Southern Baptist public policy arm. And those guys, Russell Moore and J.D. Greer and some of those guys, Andy Stanley, I don't know, is he still at Southern Baptist or is he independent?
North Point, I think they're officially Southern Baptist, but they don't hardly act like it.
Okay. I'm always amused by the J.D. Greer, for example, his church, they don't put Southern Baptist on their church sign. And yet he is the president of the Southern Baptist. I don't know. It's just something seems funny about that.
In fact, when he accepted to run for president, he had a meeting with his congregation. He says, "Now, I know some of you don't even know
we're a Southern Baptist church. But I'm about to be president. Did you put Ray, when you were pastor, did you put the Southern Baptist on your church or not?
Well, I never pastored a Southern Baptist church. I was pastored a covenant church, but we had that in our name. And the last two churches were independent, non-denominational churches. But I think it's that's the trend of the day, isn't it? If you start a new church, whether it's Methodist, Baptist, or Presbyterian, you either leave it out or you put it in microscopically small letters on the sign so that nobody can read it.
Well, you know, I think that's not a Bible thing. That's just funny to me that you...
Yeah, we're kind of Baptist.
but don't tell anybody.
Don't tell anybody.
Don't
hold it against us.
There are Methodist churches, Presbyterian churches that do the same thing. And if you ask the people who are proponents of leaving the denomination off, they say, well, we don't want a denomination on the sign to prevent somebody from coming to worship because they have a caricature or a stereotype of who we are. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what is it that we got 4 minutes here? So what is it that Pastor Greer said
in a recent podcast
that you want a reaction from?
Yeah, in a recent podcast, he says white privilege exists, and those of us that experience a certain privilege,
are you quoting him now? By the way,
pardon?
Are you quoting him now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So he says white privilege does exist.
Okay.
Those of us that experience a certain privilege of whatever kind, we want to see people of a different race, from different backgrounds. We want to see them have access to the same opportunities, the same privileges that we have.
Okay. He's talking to white people?
Well, he's on a podcast.
Oh, and he's been interviewed by a white person, evidently. He says we.
Yeah. So he is using the language of a culture out there that seems to condemn the idea of white privilege.
Right.
J.D. Greer is saying white privilege does exist,
uh-huh.
and he believes the rights that whites have ought to be extended to everyone.
What Bible verse are we citing now?
Don't know.
No, that was a podcast. That wasn't a sermon.
Yeah.
What? You got a problem with that, Alex?
Well, you know, I've got a problem whenever we try to add something to the gospel, like social justice. Mm-hmm. I've got a problem when we paint with a broad brush and just assume that, you know, because a person is Caucasian, that they are inherently racist. And the other thing that I would say that this smacks of is that part of our job as Christians and Americans is to self-flagellate and apologize for the fact that a sovereign God made us a certain ethnicity. Right. I mean, and it's really almost a type of racism to...
Yeah.
So I guess I would say, as a Southern Baptist, as a tithing Southern Baptist who, you know, I was apologetics director at the North American Mission Board, so I know a little bit about how the Southern Baptist world works. I would just gently encourage my brother to be more about the Great Commission and less about political relevancy and social justice.
Alex, this is Walker here. Let me ask you another question real quick. When the left talks about white privilege, could it be that what they're talking about, statistically speaking, is that the vast majority of upper to middle class white families have a mother and a father in the home, they both graduated college, and they have a fairly stable home life? Was that what white privilege is? Because that's what's wrong with that.
Yeah.
Well, they don't know how hard people have worked to get where they are. You know, many of us have not been people of means, and we had to work to get where we are.
Well, I tell you where there isn't white privilege, my friend, and that's on the interstate.
Oh, that's true.
Huh? As a white man, the people who pass me are blacks every single time. and they're going 90, and they don't care. Is that a racial stereotype? I don't know, but it's a fact. All right. Thank you, Alex.
God bless you all. God bless America.
Okay. Like folks, I guess, got better radar detectors. I don't know what the deal is. But I'm dead serious about that. All right. I'm very about that happening to me. All right. Ray, you going to hang with me here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll be back. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.